extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Ow, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I'm Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Charlie Davies, reportedly with us today as well. A scholar, a gentleman, a POG enthusiast. Sam Stayskull. What's
reportedly,
up, man?
Reportedly with you. I think we can confirm that.
Yeah, is it confirmed?
I'm right here.
I'm gonna hit up Paul. I'll text Paul. We'll get it confirmed. Not mess with you, man. It's good to see you.
It's good to see you.
The main, the flow for those of us on YouTube.
Yeah.
Wow, the curls are really coming in, Sam.
Yeah, you know, the pandemic's been hard on a lot of people, and especially on my barber, because he doesn't get seen anymore. So there you go.
Yeah, it's tough for him. I got a recommendation for you.
You make it work. So.
Well, thank you guys. I appreciate that. I'm not sure how true it is, but we're trying.
Yeah, we're all looking a little scrubby this morning. That's because MLS midweek was going on last night. MLS After Dark was absolutely incredible. We have a big show coming up. Revs make history, 73 points, most in the regular season ever. But does it matter if they don't win MLS Cup? Try to answer that one. Sporting Kansas City took control of the Western Conference last night. Johnny Russell, oh boy, he is a special guy. Vinny Sartini's going to join this show. I don't know if he has a voice. Vancouver won. Sartini screamed, uttered, I don't know. It got very emotional, as he has after every single one of these results. And playoff implications, oh my. Go to MLSsoccer.com. The call-up had Kellen Acosta. He's the most fashionable man in MLS. We had the good, the bad, the playoff implications from Wednesday night. That's my column. That's a little self-promotion there. Charlie Boehm had a great feature on Andy Nahar. And Matt Doyle and Tom Bogert are double-teaming teams that get eliminated. What 2021 means for them, and also three big questions. But the big news here, it's an important day for Extra Time, Sam, and I think you're the right person to celebrate it with us. It's the inaugural Die Run Day here at ETR. It's a new MLS holiday. Come celebrate our budget, Zlatan. What a goal. What an absurd goal. We thought Lucas El Rayan was going to have the honors, Charlie. Tell me from a striker's point of view what you need to have in your mind to attempt something like this, because this isn't something that just, you know, anybody does. You know, it's like Zlatan and Dairon, and then there's like maybe three or four other guys I might put it to, let alone to finish it. A bicycle kick that you knock up to yourself while running away from goal to loop in as the Timbers get a huge win against San Jose. Try to take me to Dairon's head if you can.
Well, you know the keeper's out, and it doesn't matter what direction your body's facing, you're trying to put a shot on goal. And if you've done it, if you've practiced it, like most strikers have in their life, I mean, I remember as a kid, my father would have me just do an hour of bicycle kicks. An hour.
That sounds dangerous. That like
different types of
you're a growing boy, man. Those bones might be a little brittle. You never know. That's I hope you had a pad or something. Like,
no,
that hard New Hampshire ground, man. It's frozen ground. You do that bicycle
but
kick.
But I'm born with it.
It's full Melian Roldan smackdown impact.
Yeah. But I'm all about it. And the fact that you pull it off in a professional game, because it's easy to do when you're just having fun. But to have the trust and belief and confidence to know you can pull it off, I mean, that was spectacular. So all I got to say is respect to Dairon.
Feels like that's the goal Nuhu should get for his first, Sam.
I was going to say, like, this is real Nuhu energy on that goal. Like, he went out there and he was just like, you know, you asked Charlie, what are you preparing for? What are you thinking about? I think the answer is you're not thinking when you try something like that. You're just acting purely on instinct, and it was fantastic.
Trust Dairon's instincts, and I guess trust him in 2021, because his previous goal hauls in MLS last year, no goals, two the year before that, 1-2, 1-1, 10 this year. That was the hit double digits for Dairon. Big win for the Timbers. Had to enjoy that one. Shout out to the weekly winner of our Extra Time Fantasy League. What's this? Jamie Watson. Yeah, Jamie's Watson actually won this thing. His dream team put up 131 points.
Jaime Watson.
Yeah, Randall Leal and Walker Zimmerman in his team. Surprise, surprise, Jamie. Loading up on Nashville players against FC Cincinnati. Smart move there. And let's get to it, guys. The Revs. We've talked about them over and over and over. Sam, you're here because Charlie and I have basically exhausted everything we could possibly say about the New England Revolution in 2021. They are now, as I said, the all-time points leader in the regular season in MLS. 73 points, 2019 LAFC are now second with 72. They could get to 76. They got Inter Miami at home on the final day of the season. So they could widen this gap even further. It's the fourth time in the last 5 years this record has been broken. What does this mean?
It means they had a really good season. I'm not sure that they're quite as good or as dominant as some of the other teams we've seen break the record in recent years. And it is kind of wild. You know, we saw the record go down in 17, I believe, 18, 19, and now 21. The only season in the last five that it didn't was the one that wasn't a full season. So there was no chance that it would have happened in 2020. So it's kind of wild how this record continues to fall every year. But the Revs have been excellent. And I just think back, you know, Bruce Arena had the quote last night, that he inherited a bleep show in May of 2019. And I was in Boston at the time. Charlie, you were obviously around the team at the time. And it was a bleep show. And they were like 2-8-2. They had lost two games in a row by 5 goals. There was, you know, I was going back and looking over some old articles and notes from that time. And Brad Friedel's last game in charge was a 5-0 loss in Chicago. And they were down 2-0 at halftime. And they're screaming at each other in the locker room and things are bad. And after the game, guys are just basically like, yeah, you know, we kind of quit. Kind of quit in this game. And I remember Andrew Farrell telling me after the season when the Revs had clinched the playoffs with a game to spare after this remarkable turnaround that they had. Like, his thought was like, okay, well, F you then, right? And to go from that to then, like, 2 weeks later starting a run where they didn't lose for, like, 3 months, it felt like, and then make the playoffs and then make the conference final last season and now do what they've done, it's pretty incredible. And it's not like they've completely overhauled this entire team. You know, they probably have 6-7 starters on the squad that were part of that bleep show back in May 2019. So it's not as if they've completely made everything new in terms of the roster, but guys have developed. Obviously, Bruce has his, you know, magic wand that he's waving, and it's worked pretty well. So yeah, it's a pretty remarkable accomplishment, and we'll see how they follow it up in the playoffs.
I'm imagining Bruce waving that magic wand right now, and it's a pretty entertaining sight. Here's a quote from him last night. I guess they accomplished more than any team in the history of the league, I guess. So that's a heck of a story. So you guys have something to write. You don't have to write about the formations and all the other stuff. It'll be a history essay. After they got this done, and you look at what they've done, they tied for the post-shootout era record for wins as well, because the Red Bulls in their record-setting season actually had 22-2, but the Revs have more draws. And I thought about what Bruce said in 2016. And if you Google Bruce Arena, some idiot, this quote comes up because it was about a question about analytics when he was Galaxy manager. Quote, "We won the game. That's what you do in soccer games." And Charlie, that's what this team seemingly just does better than anybody else. I think it's 18 of 22 now are one-goal wins. Obviously, this 1-0 win against the Rapids is a one-goal win. Tejon Buchanan laid on, and you know, you get him in that position on sort of the outside of the box, 1v1, and he takes two or three touches, and he's by you, and he puts it back post, and that's the end of it. This team just wins soccer games better than anybody else. They might not, as Sam says, blow people out the way LAFC did. They might not look as dominant as Toronto FC did at times. Their style of play might not be as distinctive as that Red Bulls press was, but they just do what you do in soccer games, to quote Bruce Arena.
Well, I can tell you this. A lot of people may say they're not the most dominant team in history, or they don't seem to be. Just when you watch them play, they're not blowing out teams 4-0, 5-0. But what they do have are a number of game changers, so that if they're not playing well or they're kind of in cruise control throughout the match, and all of a sudden they flip a switch and they just do what needs to be done to win the game. They don't go, you know, they're not focused on winning 5-0 every game. They're not blowing you, you know, out of the water. But what they are doing is getting results. And I think I was really concerned with this team because they got used to going into a hole or going down a goal or not playing well and then flipping the switch on later in the second half. You can't do that in the playoffs, especially against a team like Nashville, who have only given up 31 goals this season and are just really difficult to break down, especially when they're playing in front. If you give them a lead, more times than not, you're not going to be able to dig yourself out of that hole. So I think for me, what Bruce Arena has done this year of getting Gustavo Bo and Adam Buxa to play together, because last year that did not seem possible. When you watch them two play, they were both individuals. They were both had their own agendas, and it was about personal success. Whereas you watch them this year, and they're looking for each other more. Adam Buxa is more geared towards being the finisher, But I mean, Gustavo Bo's always looking for him. They have a good connection, and the unselfishness, I think, has really been something that's allowed the New England Revolution to grow as a team. And then Carlos Hill, I mean, I it's like I said, for a lot of people, they see him in Major League Soccer and they say it's a sin that he's not playing in Europe on a Champions League roster, because he's that good. I mean, he set the record for most chances created in a single season. He is just, I mean, he's a joy to watch because he's just so gifted. And then Tajon Buchanan is another player who's one of the brightest stars in North America right
now. And is going to be a Champions League player in Europe very shortly.
Absolutely. But he hasn't played that well with the Revs since, you know, he started producing for Canada and once his deal was passed with Club Brugge. So you figured, oh, you know, maybe he's just fatigued and needs a little break, or maybe his mind is in so many different places. For him to get a goal last night, I think puts him in the right frame of mind heading into the playoffs.
Let me just ask the question, and I want you guys to try to chisel it in stone here as much as you can. Is this Revs team the best regular season team in MLS history? They have the points. They have the results that say that they are. Sam, are they? Or would you say, no, I might be more of a 2019 LAFC guy, or God, that TFC team in 2017 with, you know, the three-headed, I can't say no to them.
Yeah, I would say no. You know, and it's just kind of, you know, you mentioned it, 18 of the 22 wins have been by one goal. I don't have LAFC's goal difference from 2019 in front of me, but they were rocking teams week to week. I think they played better soccer. I think they had more talent up front just because of Vela and what he did, despite everything that Charlie just said about Carlos Hill and Buxa and Bo that I agree with 100%. But they were clicking on a different level.
Plus 48 for that 2019 LAFC team. I mean, 26.
That's almost double.
Now, the one thing I will say, this Revs team already has two more away wins than the LAFC team did. That LAFC team at home was a juggernaut. I don't know. Yeah. Maybe we should go Sounders, ask Sounders fans to do the math here. How many wins did they have against bad teams or teams with less than 13 wins? It's an important metric that we need to explore.
So that's part of it too. But I think this Revs team is well equipped for the playoffs, though. Like, I absolutely believe that. And maybe more so than some of the more exciting teams we've seen in the regular season. Because those one-goal games, those one-goal wins, that's how playoff games go. And they're experienced in those ways.
Charlie, what do you say, man? You're close to this.
Yeah, I would say last night against the Colorado Rapids was a really important test. Yes, the Rapids didn't play, you know, some of their big players. Like, I would have liked to see them come into that match with full strength, because they're still playing for the Western Conference title, and there's three games left. Like, go out there and play Barrios from the beginning. Go out there and play Dominic Baggi at the from the beginning if you weren't going to play with a target striker, and Kellen Acosta, and I know Keegan Rosenberry was injured, but Jack Price. Some of these players who you've kind of said, hey, these are my best 11. These are the guys who make our team go. Have them play so we could have seen a more toe-to-toe match. But I think from the Revolution standpoint, this was a game where Colorado come in. They're a team that's a hardworking, industrial type team where, you know, what you're going to get from them every match. Set pieces, they're very dominant. And they played a game where they didn't give up a goal. They won 1-0, which we were accustomed to seeing them do, win by one goal. And I think it was a good test for them to say, okay, this is what the Western Conference can throw at us, and I think we're ready for that.
What are their best team in regular season history?
If they win MLS Cup, then I give them.
But that's not the regular season, Charlie. You're moving the goalposts on me right now.
This is how, for me, things are judged. Regular season is one thing, and they were phenomenal.
So you don't care. That's what you're saying. It doesn't matter. That's completely irrelevant is what you're saying.
Yes. Unless you win MLS Cup. If you can do both, for me, then they are cemented as the best regular season team. What? Because they backed it up in the playoffs too. And it's very, very hard to do. It's a difficult thing to do. That's why we haven't seen it too often. But if this team can do that, and what I love about them is when you look at the spine of the Revolution, Matt Turner, for me, is the best goalkeeper in Major League Soccer, and I don't think too many people will argue against that. Now, the center backs and the defensive midfielder, so you have Farrell and Kessler, not too many people would say, hey, you have the best center backs in the league, but they've worked well together as a partnership. They've been phenomenal, because typically one of them would get exposed if they were on the dribble, if they, you know, checked into midfield following a striker, or if they get pulled out to the sidelines. but they've been so well equipped to handle whoever has been thrown at them because of that balance that they provide each other. And then you look in front of them, Matt Polster, I thought this year he's been phenomenal, and he doesn't get that much credit because you see what Joao Paulo is doing with Seattle Sounders, but he's been such an instrumental fulcrum for the Revolution, just protecting the back four, you know, covering for Farrell or covering for Kessler, playing simple, breaking the lines. He's been really strong this year for the Revolution.
We know he has, man. Tell me about MLS Cup.
I don't think he gets credit.
Okay, we've hit it. Like, if they're going to win MLS Cup, he'll be there. What does this mean to this team? MLS Cup.
They have so much depth. If they win MLS Cup, it'll go down as the greatest team in Major League Soccer history.
Do you agree with that, Sam?
No.
I'm trying to wrap my head around
Toronto FC in 17, Atlanta in 18 would be ahead of that for me. You could probably put one of Bruce's Galaxy teams.
I think you have to go back to DC teams early days. We did all this during the pandemic when we just like combed through every history book we could in MLS because we had nothing that we could do other than that.
I mean, they would be incredible. They'd be in that discussion. I'm not trying to take anything away. But I don't think they're quite at the level of those other teams.
And I would just say, when you put their record against anyone else and the fact that they've won the double, that they have to be considered the best team.
I think they would be in the consideration.
Okay. If you want to put in consideration or whatever. But either way, what they've been able to accomplish, and they don't have all the David Beckham names or the Landon Donovan names or Robbie Keane's or Al Marone's and Joseph Martinez or, you know, some Carlos Vela, for instance, that team. But I think what handicapped that LAFC team for me was their goalkeeping. And that's why they're not, they didn't win MLS Cup. And that's why, for me, they're not considered the greatest team in Major League Soccer, is because they had a real clear deficit that the other teams didn't, that you're talking about.
What about that 2017 TFC team, though? Because they won the Shield and Cup and the Canadian Championship.
Yeah, I mean, I
they made a run in CCL right off the back of it.
We lost to them in Toronto in the playoffs, the first round, when I was with the Philadelphia Union. And I remember, you know, you have Josie and Jovinko, who are just running the show. I mean,
Vasquez,
Jovinko
too,
at that time was just incredible. And Vasquez, and then you throw in Michael Bradley. I think defensively they weren't as strong. Just for me, I think attacking minded, fantastic. I think defensively they weren't as strong for me.
This is going to be a debate we have for a long time. Sam, I know you have to get out of here. Give us a quick update on what's going around MLS news wise, particularly in these open positions. There are so many of them right now. I mean, we have Stu Holden on the Houston GM job. Says Pat Onstead.
Yeah, it is Pat Onstead.
Okay, there you go. So, I mean, I assumed when Stu tweeted it,
that Dynamo legend needs confirmation on Dynamo who, News.
Sam, right? who else would have been in consideration had it not been Pat Onstead?
Yeah, so Tom Bogert reported this as well, but Dennis Teclosa was in the mix there. He's still with the LA Galaxy. You know, his contract is up. They have an option on it, so we'll see how that goes. But yeah, otherwise, Chicago, their head coaching search is chugging along. We reported at The Athletic yesterday that they're flying in Ezra Hendrickson, Columbus Crew assistant, who's been head coach for the last couple of games, I think, while Caleb Porter's been out. Ezra Hendrickson, Paulo Nagamura, who's SKC2, their USL head coach. And why am I blanking on
Ante
the last
Razov. Name? Yeah, Ante Razov was the most sort of
fire
like
legend.
Chicago connection. You know, like what he said when he got into the Hall of Fame there or had his number retired, that the only
ring
badge
of
he
fire.
Would ever
yes.
yeah ring of the ring of fire yes the only badge he would ever kiss is the fire badge. So I don't know if he was talking about that old fire badge or if the new fire badge still works.
Definitely not the new fire badge.
The rebranded?
Yeah, the new one's
definitely
good. It's the middle ground fire badge that he will not kiss.
The new fire badge. Maybe he'll kiss that one. So yeah, he's in the mix there. Those aren't necessarily the only three guys that are in the mix, but they have cleared the first hurdle of the first round of interviews, and now they're coming for an in-person one. So that one's moving along. RSL, I get the sense they're waiting until after the season. Obviously, Pablo Mastroeni has kept them in the playoff places, which they were in when Freddy Juarez left a couple of months ago. So they're closing pretty strong. We know Landon Donovan pulled out of that race, but there's some other guys.
Do you know any reason why that he pulled out?
I don't know specifically, but if you look at the situation, I think you can probably put two and two together. They don't have an owner.
Yeah.
Right? Like, they don't have an owner. So it's kind of a weird opportunity. Do you want to move your family and leave a situation where Landon is coaching San Diego USL and he's a part owner?
He's the man.
He's got a real stake in that club.
Yep.
Do you want to leave that to go to a situation where you don't know who your boss is going to be in a week or a month or a year? Right. Like, so I think that's probably a lot to do with it. So I think Pablo Mastroianni will stay in the mix there. Some other names that I've heard, Jason Kreis, Pat Noonan, Luchi Gonzalez. I would expect those guys to be in the mix in Salt Lake when all is said and done. And then, like I said, Pablo Mastroianni as well, who's doing a good job as interim manager.
Do you have a feel for San Jose? It feels both with Mateus Almeida as well as obviously the open GM spot. It just sort of feels like they're in this.
It's weird.
This like middle ground limbo position where nobody really knows where it's headed.
I mean, they said that they wanted to have this thing hired and done like mid September, and here we are. It's basically November, and there's still been no announcement. My read on the situation is that it'll be Chris Leach, who's the technical director and has been running the sporting staff since Jesse Fiorinelli was fired this summer. And then we'll see what happens with Mateus Almeida. You know, he is under contract for next year, but as we know, he's connected to jobs in South and Central America seemingly every month or so. And I wouldn't be surprised if he goes.
My question to you would be, do you think he deserves to keep that position as manager?
I mean, I don't know, man. Like, what does San Jose want? What do they want to be? I have no idea. They don't have an identity at all.
That's Landon Donovan's next. That's his next job.
Return to the Quakes.
I think it just makes sense. But we'll see.
I think John Fisher would need the Quakes owner. I think he would kind of need to step up his investment for that to happen. And I think the Quakes would need to really define what they want to be, because right now I have a real question about that. That club just kind of floats. You know, and they're kind of on the bubble in the playoffs, like 8th, 9th, 7th in the West seemingly every year, and they seem to be fine with that. And it's not really driving much inspiration in the market, and it's not producing the best soccer either. So, you know, it's perfectly mediocre, and they're in that weird purgatory. I would love to see them make more of an effort to really step up.
All right, Sam, I know you got a call, man. We'll let you go. Enjoy seeing my apartment in the background.
It's my apartment, Weeby.
It's your apartment now. That's right. That's true. That's true. All right. Check out Sam on Twitter, of course, The Athletic. Any news, any notes, anything you want to know about MLS or the U.S. national team, because you are all over CONCACAF these days, man.
Yeah.
Come straight from Sam and the boys. So appreciate you joining us, man.
Thanks, guys.
Big thanks to Sam for joining us here. Go check out The Athletic for that piece on the open coaching GM positions. A lot of news, a lot of updates that will be coming around MLS as the year progresses, and maybe even some open jobs, perhaps, Charlie? We don't know. But look, Vancouver is one of those head coaching positions that is open right now. The interim is Vanni Sartini. You have got to watch this man. He is a showman, and his team is playing so well right now. A huge win against Minnesota United at home. They're above the playoff line in fifth on 47 points. Might even get a home game if all goes right over the last two. Let's talk to him now. Oh, it's an absolute joy. It's a pleasure. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field all the way out to British Columbia, to Vancouver, to Vanni Sartini. Vanni, andiamo! Let's go! Let's get this thing done. I heard you just had an espresso. You're probably pretty tired, though, right now, right? It's Thursday morning. You had an emotional win last night. How are you feeling?
I mean, good. Well, first of all, thanks for having me, guys. And, I'm feeling happy, tired, but I think I still have a little bit of adrenaline of yesterday. So I actually slept very little. So today it's going to be a good recovery day. Let's stay like this.
Running on fumes. I've been practicing here in the basement, my soccer cave. Let me know if this is about right. Good imitation of Vanni Sartini. Do I hit the table first before I say it? Or do I andiamo and then hit the, like, how do I? This is your rallying cry, man. This should be a hashtag. This should be a t-shirt.
Yeah, but you know, it's like, as you said before, I'm a pretty emotional person, so it's who I am. And but to be perfect, you need to do the bouncing on the table with both the hands.
Two hands. I did the one hand. See, that
you got to perfect it.
Yes, technique is important in these sort of things. No doubt about it. Emotional leadership. Tell us about that on your side, because we see the pregame speeches, we see the interactions with the fans, we just see who you are. Is this always for you? Is this 24/7?
Well, I would say yes. I'm a very extrovert person. I take energy from other people and I try to give energy to other people. I think that what we do is, I would say it's the base is the doing your task in the best way. It's what I say to the player every time, because the emotion, the going 100%, trying to go over the wall per se, it's not enough. If it's something that can boost the work that we are doing day by day, I think it can be an asset. So we need to be, I would say, ourselves every time, and we need to be as true as we are every time, and that who I am, basically.
Vanny, take us back to August 27th, when Mark Dos Santos is relieved from his duties and you're put in charge. How did you experience all that? What was going through your mind, and what were you told?
Well, you know, I was on the field coaching the U23 teams, because that was my role, and the sporting director came down to the field, and I say, okay, that means that means something big, because, you know, it's not, the sporting director is focused on the first team most of the time, and they said that they were relieving Mark from his duties, and they wanted me to take care of the team on an interim basis, and I had to do a press conference in an hour and the first training session in an hour and a half. So that's
oh wow.
That was pretty, my heart started spinning, of course, but so the first thing that I did was to have a meeting with the players, the most experienced players, because I didn't want to, you know, go there, even if I knew most of them, because I've been an assistant with the team for 2 years. But getting in the locker room and saying, oh, now I'm the new leader, and it would have been, I would say, meaningless for me. So I asked them, okay, how are we? Where are we at the moment? Guys, tell me what's the situation? What are your needs? Because I think that that's also the basic of everything. You were talking about emotional leadership before, but I think that the coach needs to do a servant leadership, because he needs to lead for the player. And so from that we started, and then I focused on the thing where I'm feeling more comfortable, that being on the field and the tactical part of the game, the how to coach and those kind of things, and trying to focus 100% on that and not being, I would say, affected by any other thing like, I don't know, what's going to happen next week or next month or next season. So try to be focused on there and be, I would say, really myself and without any filter with fans and press.
If there was one player that has benefited the most from your philosophy and your emotional leadership, like what you're talking about, connecting to a player, which player would that be?
I don't know if I have to say one player, because what I say every time, you saw those speech when I say that the team is the leader, the group is the leader, the team tactical principles are the leader of our team. I think that everyone, I would say, embraced this philosophy. Someone immediately from day one, someone is normal after a few days, they struggle a little with the change, but it's normal because it's life. When there's something new, you need to face something different. So I think all the group really embrace it, and they're doing fantastically so far.
Help us understand what your vision is and what's being executed right now, sort of in that more of a general sense tactically, and also how you got to that point as a coach, because, Vanny, I really only know you as 2019 on, assistant to Mark Dos Santos and within the Whitecaps organization, but you have this whole life, this whole career before that. Help people understand the context around you.
Well, the way that we play first, it's like we try to be as aggressive as we can, but I say that the key is organization. If you're not organized, if you're not very well, if you don't know where to be in every position, it's for me, tactics is the reign of the game. It's the king and the queen of the game. So if you don't do things to the T, it's impossible to flourish also as a single individual. And then if you are talented also, if you play in the organization, better. So we try to be very aggressive with our press. I would say I call it a very zonal, because we are a very zonal team. We don't like to man mark. And then the other thing that we try to do when we have the ball is to be as practical as we can, to break the first line of pressure and then attack the space in behind of the other team. Because for the players that I have, I think it's the best way to play. About me, it's my path started, as you can tell from my accent, in Italy. And I played there at a very low level, so like kind of amateur, elite amateur. Like soccer was always my second job to go on. Then I started coaching, but at the same time I started doing coach education. So I did teaching is my other passion, and I taught coaches at every level, from grassroots level to the pro level. And I started coaching from the lower level, getting up. And I think that this experience helped me a lot, because even before going to the Whitecaps, I worked for 2.5 years for the U.S. Soccer Federation. I was a coach educator for them. And that helped me a lot to understand MLS. And every time that also I had to, quote unquote, mentor or be the instructor of one of my pro license candidate, I always not only maybe gave something to them, but for sure I learned something to my candidate every time. So I think that to be a coach in 2021, you need to be able to play every system, to play in every way of playing, and to play and to be able to work in every condition. And it's our task to try to know, quote unquote, everything. It's not possible to know everything, but that's the utopia that we need to try to reach.
I'm not buying you not inspiring one player in particular, because I look at Brian White, and as a striker, 12 goals this year, he's on fire. Talk to me what he's done so well for you this year, and how he's seems like he's continuing to grow with his influence in the game.
Brian does everything for the team. I think he's one of the most, I would say, selfless, team-oriented striker. Sorry, guys. Let me take a glass of
water. Yeah, too much yelling, Vanny. You got so excited last night. I understand. Like, I get it, man. I'd be losing my voice too.
It's the espresso.
Yeah. It's a guy that works a lot for the team, and the team works for him. He's always on the right position at the right moment. He does very simple thing. But at the same time, he has, as I said before, if you work for the team, if you have talent, then you can flourish as an individual, because he has been very clinical in the box, scoring, and now he has a level of confidence that probably is doing things that he wasn't even imagining few months ago, and protecting the ball, dribbling, and so I think it's... He's been very good for us, and at the moment is one of the top strikers in the league, I think.
One of the best number 10s in the league, into the team, and a transfer bargain at that, just like Brian White. Ryan Gauld has been absolutely incredible. Take us into what makes him special. For those out there that haven't watched the Whitecaps play very much yet, they're watching their team, they can't stay up late as some of us do on Wednesday nights, etc. Ryan Gauld, from your perspective, what makes him special?
Well, Ryan Gauld is, forgive me, I'm Italian, so I have also always Italian reference. So Ryan Gauld is like if Totti had the work ethic defensively of Gattuso. That's the thing. And of course, I'm not saying that he's better than Totti and he's better than Gattuso.
Sure,
right?
Sure, sure.
But that's the thing. He is a talent. He's a number 10. He's someone who can make you win the game with a play. But at the same time, he is the first one to do the defensive work. He's the first one to do everything that we ask him as a staff. Give you an example. In some games, like yesterday too, in the last 15 minutes, when we have to defend the result from the number 10 position, we bring him to the number 8 because we want to have one more man in the midfield, and he does it every time. And the work ethic of this player combined with his talent is the thing that amazed me the most.
Can I ask
what
you
was
real quick, Charlie? Just give me, yeah. Can I ask you what the different the difference vibe-wise is sort of within the team. From when you took over and things weren't going as well, they just got knocked out of the Canadian Championship, they were out of the playoffs, and then this is your quote last night, and this is your perspective, but I have to imagine your players are feeling some of this too. Quote, "I'm walking on clouds right now, I'm so confident, I'd be confident if we played Real Madrid next week." I mean, it feels like this sort of swelling that has happened within the club, within your team, within your players. Like, how different does it feel over the course of this, 12 games now that you've been in charge?
Well, I think there's 2-3 points that we need to remind. The first thing is that beside the Canadian Championship, that of course it was bad when we lost, but the team was growing a lot even before. So I took the team, and I think they were on a streak of 7 or 8 games, like 2 wins and 5 draws. So even under Mark, the team was improving a lot, and we're going on that direction. The second big thing, enormous thing for us, is that we came home. So you don't have to forget, guys, that last year we lived for 4 months in an hotel in Portland because the team couldn't, and I was there. And after a month, even if the hotel staff was amazing, but living in a hotel where there's no one there, and it was Portland under the election last year. So I don't know if you remember the city.
Yeah, there was a lot going on. We'll say that.
There was a lot going on. In that hotel, it looked like, Shining. It's, in those hotels when there's no one there. so it's
Red rum.
Then after that, you put on top of that the players, they went 4 months to Salt Lake. Not being at home, being in a different environment, and we had to do it because of the pandemic. And at the end, we are all lucky because we kept doing our job and everything. But I think that getting back home, having the fans, living in Vancouver back again, and living like a normal football club again, represented a massive boost for the guys to enhance this togetherness that they feel.
Well, I would say over the past 12 games where you've been in charge, there has to be that one moment that it all sinks in for you and the squad that this is real, that we're making the progress to get into the playoffs potentially, that we have something here, that the season's not over. Is there that one result or that one moment that you thought, guys, this is what it's all about? See, I told you, believe in me, because we do have the quality to be considered one of these playoff teams and make a run. Was it, that moment against Sporting Kansas City, or that moment when you win at Portland?
Well, against Sporting KC and against San Jose at home, there were fantastic performance. They gave us the confidence to say, okay, we can make it. In Portland was an epic win back. But I think for me, the moment has been when we beat Dallas here at home. We played very well. It was my 4th or 5th game in charge. We played very well, but we didn't capitalize. It was only 1-0. And then at the last minute, they had a penalty to tie Dallas. Mm-hmm. And Mark saved the penalty. And I think when those kind of thing happens, that I say, hey, that can maybe be the our season, our period, because even when things seems they're not going well, they're getting better. So it's I think that moment for me gave me the boost and the confidence to say, okay, maybe we can make it.
Is this a playoff team, Vinny? Are you guys going to make it? Straight up.
I don't know. That's another game. We have the good thing now. I think that we need to make one result in 2 games. That's a thing that, first of all, it's strange because it's a lot of week that we win, and we're always there. Everyone is winning. So everyone is 1 point behind, 2 points behind. So we have LAFC and Seattle, and we need to win one of the 2 games to be in the playoff. I think that we can do it. We show everyone that we have the skill and the resilience to do it. So we need to work really, really hard in order to do it, because it would be really a pity now not making it after this effort that we put on.
I have to ask you once again, straight up. You're in the interim job, but you're 7-2-3. You're rolling along. emotionally you're connecting with the fans. Your players seem to be connecting with what you're sort of preaching to them of this togetherness. Everybody has a job. Do your job. Focus on that. The full-time Vancouver Whitecaps job, is that a job that you want? Do you feel that you're making a good impression to get that, if that is what you want?
You know, of course, if I say no, I don't want, I'm a liar. Of course I want. Of course I'd like to have the job permanently. But I'm not focused on that. I'm focused on getting into the playoff. And then I'm so happy that at the moment I'm doing what I'm good at, so just coaching. I think that most of the time we ask the coaches to be the manager, to be the sporting director, to be the scout. No, I'm a soccer coach. So if the club wants just a coach to be focused on what happened on the field, and I think that the club has a structure now, scouting network, director of scouting, sporting director, to do it, think good in the front office, I think I can be an option for the job. If, but of course, it's a question for the higher ups, not for me.
Got to ask them that question. But right now, the results are saying Vanni Sartini. I want to see it. Andiamo! Two hands on the table, baby. Andiamo!
More espresso. Let's go.
All right. Thank you so much, Coach, for joining us. Good luck. It's LAFC on Tuesday away for the Whitecaps. So often, I assume scoreboard watching this weekend, Vanni.
Yeah, of course. It's like we'll watch, but we don't have to be focused too much on the other team. We are at the moment now that we really master of our destiny. So we're going to watch soccer because it's always beautiful to watch soccer. And MLS is amazing, especially in the last 3-4 games. Everyone wants to win. Every game is exciting. So, but we need to focus on ourselves for sure.
Tuesday, LAFC, and then on decision day, home against the Seattle Sounders. What an event that is going to be in Vancouver soccer. Vanny, we appreciate your time, man. Good luck.
Thank you so much, guys.
Hold on. Andiamo. Andiamo. Oh, andiamo, Charlie. Andiamo. That is my rallying cry. I'm going to start saying that to my kids. We got to get out the door. Andiamo. Let's go. Let's go. Get out the door. We got to get out of here. It's daycare time. Vanny, what a personality, man.
What a personality. I got nothing but respect for him, the way he's approached the job, how he's turned it around for them. I mean, he's a guy that just you want to root for because he's selfless. He's all about the team. And you could tell he deeply cares about the sport and about the club.
And infectious, too. I didn't know about his background. I didn't know that he was sort of that in that mentor position / coaching education position with U.S. soccer and those pro licenses. I just knew him when he got to Vancouver, and it was just sort of like a name that you saw come through in a press release, but wow, what he has done. We talked to him a little bit after he got off, and man, I regretted not having this on the actual interview for everybody out there listening right now. But he said yesterday was his dad's birthday. His dad living in Florence, Italy, that's where he's from. He's a big Fiorentina guy. They both are, but now dad's a big Whitecap supporter. He texts his dad when he gets out on the field for warmups and says, "Hey, Dad, wake up." Dad wakes up, watches the games in the middle of the night, like basically early morning in Italy, and then they talk afterwards. And, of course, yesterday it was time to wish his dad happy birthday as well. So, signore, I don't know, my Italian's no good. Sartini is wearing the Whitecaps jersey all the time, apparently. My guess, Charlie, he's going to the coffee shop. He's going to get his espresso. He's rocking the jersey. He's just waiting for somebody to ask him about it. Please, please ask me about this jersey so I can tell you what my son is doing in Major League Soccer. What a story are the Vancouver Whitecaps. I have a quick poll here for you. I want you to answer from Matt Doyle. The 2022 Golden Boot will go to Brian White, Brandon Vasquez, Miguel Berry, or Mason Toy, Charlie. They're on fire, baby. You don't got a response? You don't have, just throw one out there.
None of them are going to be winning the
okay,
Golden
but
Boot.
Okay, but between the four of them, look, what Brian White is doing, you have to be impressed by that.
Yeah, of those four, I would go with Brian White just because he's been consistent. And like Vanny said, he's all about the team and it's a work rate. And because of his team-like performance and selflessness, it allows him to shine individually. So for me, Brian White, of those four, we'll get the job done.
Keep an eye on Miguel Berry, though. Goal for the Crew, big 3-2 win against Orlando for them to keep them alive, even though it's kind of by a thread. And then Brandon Vasquez, can't stop him. I think that's three straight games now. Can't stop the opponent. for FC Cincinnati either. So we'll get to that in just a little bit. Let's talk through the other stories in the Western Conference, then we'll get to the East. Remember, MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app is your home for everything leading up to decision day and into the playoffs. These standings, they change constantly. When I'm watching all those games last night and trying to intake it all, I have the standings up at all times. You can see who's playing. They update every 30 seconds. It's really, really useful to understand where things are at. In the Western Conference, this is where it's at right now. Sporting Kansas City by virtue of a 2-0 home win against the Galaxy. First place, 58 points. They have got the goal differential tiebreaker on Seattle. Both teams have 17 wins. Both teams have 58 points. Seattle in second, Colorado in third. The only three teams in the West to have clinched their spots. Portland Timbers beat San Jose 2-0. Again, shout out Dairon. 49 points in fourth. They broke a three-game losing streak. Then you have Vancouver in fifth on 47, LA on 46 and sixth, Salt Lake at 45 and seventh. They have 31 games played where basically everybody else other than Kansas City has 32. Minnesota below the line in eighth after losing to Vancouver, 45 points. Again, tiebreaker wins, goes to Real Salt Lake, and LAFC is still alive in ninth. San Jose, they're out. They got the E next to their name. Let's start with the top, Charlie. Sporting Kansas City and Seattle. Tuesday in LA, Seattle lose 3-0. Brian Schmetzer, furious. Tough times in Sounders world. They have the away loss to Houston. They have the loss to Kansas City at home. Now they have this away loss to LAFC, and their grip on the West, well, it's not tight anymore. Nico Ladero comes in the second half. Raul Diaz, I said on the last show he was in Peru. That was false. I had it wrong. He is in Seattle training, trying to get back. Jordan Morris, big shrug for me. I just don't know when he will be back. I'm not sure anybody truly does. Whereas Sporting Kansas City on the flip side, missing Shallowy, missing Pulido, 2-0 LA Galaxy, the Johnny Russell show. And then, of course, you all saw it, the celebration, off the ropes, Zusi, Russell, having some fun. Tim Melia did get suspended for one game by the disciplinary committee. So he was out for this one. John Pulskamp, all of 20 years old, got the win, his first ever shutout. Which is more informative to you of these two results? Sporting Kansas City beating the Galaxy at home, or the Seattle Sounders losing 3-0 at the bank to LAFC?
Well, that's a good question. I feel that the Seattle Sounders loss to me is bigger than SKC winning at home 2-0 to the Galaxy. And the reason why is because I feel that LAFC have been poor this season for a large majority of it, at least. And this is their last type of hurrah to try and make something of the season. And Christian Arango has been absolutely sensational for them since he signed. But Carlos Vela has been absent. Brian Rodriguez, we've seen him, you know, go over for a loan, come back. Doesn't want to be there, but now he's starting to play well. And defensively, you know, you have so many question marks, but they put an absolute whooping on the Sounders.
Yeah, they worked
it,
them.
It goes back to me, it goes back to the importance of a striker for the Seattle Sounders and the importance of Raul Ruiz Diaz. And when Raul Ruiz Diaz is on the pitch, you can never count the Sounders out because he's that good. He's so dynamic, strong. You need him on the pitch to win trophies. And I feel that without him,
I agree with that point, but can I quibble a little bit? Because actually, I think the guy they missed the most in that game is not Raul Ruiz Diaz, is not Nico Lodero, though again, I said he came in late on for them. It was Joao Paulo. This was a game that if you are going to make a case for Joao Paulo's MVP candidacy, this is a game that you would point to because they just could not stop. Look, a midfield of Latif, Raheem, and Diego Palacios for LAFC. And what a performance by Palacios. You saw Bob Bradley after this one basically take him under his wing when he subbed him off and just sort of say, hey, like you killed it. Like we asked you to play a different position. We asked you to play this sort of like holding six role, ball recovery, ball winning role, a position that he had played in Ecuador, but he had mostly been a left back for this team, or at least that's the way it had been portrayed. And he went out and thrived in what is their biggest game of the season to stay alive. So, yeah, look, I think Joao Paulo, you look at him and you say they need him back, and I'm sure they will get him back given the rest they'll have before their first game in the playoffs. It seems like Raul Ruiz Diaz will get back, but we don't know at what level. Will it be sort of I kill everybody Ruiz Diaz from previous playoffs, or will it be TBD, I'm still working my way back from health? And Ladero, we still don't know. He came back, he was out. You know, it just seems stop-start at the wrong time of year for Seattle.
Well, I do know They need Raul Diaz on the pitch and Joao Paulo on the pitch. Now, Ladero would be a nice kind of cherry on top if he can get fit, if he can get in some sort of form before or during the playoffs. But I think also for Jordan Morris, I've always been an absolute fan of him on the pitch, off the pitch, just a good guy. Keep him off the pitch until next year. I say continue to let him rehab and progress. And it's going to take a while for him to get to a level where he's super confident in his movements and he's match fit and he's built all the strength up. I feel like don't just throw him out there now. And it's been a while, but still give him enough of another off season, let him build into it. And then he's going to be flying come next year. So I'm all about just continuing to keep him on the side and let him continue to build his fitness.
We'll see what they decide to do. Joao Paulo is suspended, I believe, yellow card, so he will be back for the Sounders. It may not matter that they don't win the West if they don't win the West, because Sporting Kansas City would still have to win as well to get all the way there, and there's been some struggles in the playoffs in recent years for Kansas City, but last four for Brian Schmetzer's team, loss at against Houston, draw at the Rapids, that 1-1 game, and then Kansas City loss, and now LAFC loss. Last two of the year for them, they're home against the Galaxy on Monday, little strange one, Monday Night Soccer, and then on Decision Day, they are at the Vancouver Whitecaps. So those will help decide where they are in these standings through the rest of the season. Now, how about Johnny Russell, man? I put the question out there. Who's more valuable to Kansas City, Johnny Russell or Daniel Shalloway? Sort of feels like it might be Johnny Russell, and that might not even be just recency bias, Charlie.
It 14, is recency bias. 14 come
goals.
On.
Come on. Who's the better player? Between those two guys, who's the better player?
I think if you're going to say better player, Johnny Russell. But this season, it's been Shalloway.
Okay. They're in the playoffs. They got the X next to their name. So what's most valuable to Kansas City? The player that will help them win MLS Cup. If they're both healthy, who would be most helpful, in your opinion, to that effort to win MLS Cup?
Johnny Russell.
I think it's Johnny Russell too. That's complete respect to what Daniel Shalloway has done and his abilities as a player. But Johnny Russell is just he's
a game changer.
Oh my God, he's almost unstoppable at times.
And that's the thing, when you say at times, if he could be consistent throughout a season, the course of a season and playoffs, he probably wouldn't be with Sporting Kansas City. So what they need from him now is to continue to build off of this. Be the Johnny Russell that they need him to be. Get on the ball and just run. Take opponents on and create havoc. Because when he's doing that, he can go right or left and just break teams down. That's the X factor for the Sporting Kansas City team in the playoffs. If he's on his game, that opens up everything for Kyrie Shelton, for Gadi Kinda, for the rest of the attack, because now you're moving players out of position to have to deal with Johnny Russell to account for his movements and his ability to dribble. So this team is one of those teams that it's like a sleeping beast, because if he's on, if Shalloway's on, it's going to be really difficult to stop them. But I still look at their defensive woes throughout the course of the season, where they put in some good performances defensively, but they have to defend as a team. They can't just rely on the back four to put out fires. They have to defend as a team, and if they don't, they're not gonna be lasting the playoffs for far too long.
I'm gonna straight up say it. I'm not that worried about the defense anymore.
Okay,
I'm not. I think it's a storyline that was right and correct for people to be concerned about, particularly when the injuries were sort of ravaging them. But if they have, and look, there is an if here, if they have Fontas and they have Izzy Matt Marine going into the playoffs and both those guys stay healthy, you have what I would say is arguably the defender of the year in Fontas in MLS, and you have a perfect complement, a perfect foil to Fontas' sort of like anticipation ability, skill and vision and execution on the ball, because we've said it on this show, if you watch the team, if you look at the stats, it doesn't matter how you measure it, he is the starting point for so much of what they do in possession and attempting to create chances and also defend with that possession. If they have those two guys and Tim Mears in goal, they have a chance to win any game that they're in. Jose Mari has been a huge signing for them. He has helped solidify the midfield. I know he's been a little in and out. Roger Espinoza continues to be like, what age? I don't age. I'm slowing down a little bit, but you're not going to notice it as often as you think you might. This Kansas City is going the opposite direction. Team is going the opposite direction as the Sounders right now. Who'd you be more scared of? Just going to the playoffs right now. Who do you think has a better chance to make a run? Let's say that Pulido gets back. We don't know what level he's at. Let's say Ruiz Diaz gets back. We don't know what levels he's at. Ladero is a sub. In your world, I'm going to say Jordan Morris is not going to be a part of this because they're going to be uber cautious with him. Kansas City gets Shaui, who's got that ankle sprain, I think it is. They're saying he's day-to-day, and Hungarian media is saying a month, and ankle sprains are fickle, so we don't know.
They are fickle.
Probably back in good form, you would think, for the playoffs, given the amount of break that they will have, and if they get that one seed in the bye. Who would you be more scared of?
The Seattle Sounders, no doubt. Okay. You're telling me João Paulo and Raul Ruiz Diaz are fully fit, 100%? You'd be a fool to say Sporting Kansas City just because of how I think the level of skill, but complemented with the
same number of wins, better goal differential, more goals scored for Kansas City, only three more goals allowed.
I'm telling you right now, it's the Seattle Sounders. Okay. You can't deny just how many weapons they have. And I think for me, it goes back to the complete team and the spine. I'm going to go with Seattle Sounders when it comes to that over the Sporting Kansas City.
I don't know, man. Sounders has shown us in the past that form can matter. Now also quality matters, and they've always had that in these situations. But form's going to be a big deal, as well as health going into this.
Your
last
blue
one
heart.
Before we keep it moving.
Rub that blue heart for me.
Get out of here. What'd you think of the celebration by Johnny Russell and Zusi? As a noted creative celebrator.
Yeah, class. Those two are gentlemen. I like it. I love it. It's good for the game. Any type of celebration that brings fans together, teams together, you give it to them. So respect to the team.
Definitely brought a team together, Sporting Kansas City. Don't know if it brought fans all around the country together, but we'll argue that for another day. Big result for Real Salt Lake. They were down 1-0 to FC Dallas. A little bit of a howler for David Ochoa to go down 1-0. And you're thinking, oh man, that extra game in hand, this opportunity, controlling your destiny. Well, it doesn't matter if you don't control it. And guess who controlled it? Demir Krylock and Albert Rusnak. Those are the guys that you want to see make the difference. Pablo Mascherini made some changes in and around about the 75th minute, brought on Justin Miriam, and I think and Brody, and the game just sort of turned. Real Salt Lake came back and won. They are now above the playoff spot in seventh. They have 31 games played, whereas everybody around them has 32. They control their destiny, but again, you got to win those games to get it going. So congratulations to Pablo and the squad on the win. They took on San Jose on Saturday. Univision tuned in on Twitter, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, so check that one out. Also, I have to tell you that Sporting Kansas City have a big game against Minnesota United in Minnesota on Sunday at 1 p.m. Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Deportes. Minnesota, Charlie, we didn't really touch them in the Vancouver Whitecaps discussion. That was a big, big, big loss for Minnesota. And it was a loss with all those big guns in the lineup.
Huge loss. And it goes back to them just being, for me, bang average. And they spent so much money. They got the squad that they're dreaming of, all the players that they were looking to bring in. Let's not bring up the fact that they, expected Ramon Abila to be some big star.
Oh, he's not even there anymore, Charlie. Turn your sights on Fernando Adi if you're going to go at anybody. I think he scored last night, so I guess maybe you can, but yeah.
But this team has not done it. Just hasn't done it. They haven't lived up to it. And this is a team that's coming off.
It's not that they haven't done it. They haven't lived up to the expectations that they set as a team last year and as an organization, and that they set with their spin on a Fragapane, on a Reynoso, on a Hunu, on a, on Robin Lud, on, on and on and on and on. They haven't measured up.
They haven't delivered. And it's disappointing considering how much talent they have. So for me, it's a concern. And I wouldn't be surprised if they're not in the playoffs come the end of the year, because now they're on the outside, right? And you have LAFC who are hungry, Salt Lake who have games in hand, LA Galaxy, that's one that could go either way.
That's the one, Charlie. Let me paint a picture for you right now. For Minnesota, they are at home against Sporting, as I said on ESPN on Sunday. Their decision day game is at the LA Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
The Galaxy right now lead them by a point. The Galaxy are away to Seattle on Monday. Let's just say, for the sake of argument, the Galaxy win that game. It's unlikely. Let's say they win it. Let's say Minnesota United also win it. That game on decision day would then be for a playoff spot.
Right.
Like, straight up for a playoff spot. No other result in the whole thing I don't think will matter based on the scenarios I've looked at. That would be for a playoff spot. But both these teams now essentially are in must-win situations to get into the playoffs.
And how do you feel about that?
And they have tough schedules. They have really tough schedules.
Yeah.
Sporting in Seattle up in the next one, just to set up the decision day game.
And it's a disappointment that they're in the eighth spot right now. There's not a single person will tell you otherwise. It is disappointing that Minnesota are in the position they're in now, given how much money they've spent and given how well they did last year and the expectations that were put on them, not only from themselves, but from the supporters.
Absolutely. Those couple games at the beginning of the season, you can shrug them off after you get off the losing streak. But now when you're at this point of the season, you look back at that slow start and you think, that is the difference between us maybe having a home game here. If we win one, two, maybe get 7 points out of those, and being outside the playoffs with two games left. Let's go to the Eastern Conference. Run it down for you in case you weren't watching or paying attention last night or haven't seen the standings. Who's in first? Oh, man, you listen to this show. You've gotten 55 minutes in. New England Revolution, 73 points. Nashville right behind. They were down 3-1 in Cincinnati, and I was thinking, is this going to be Cincinnati's second home win of the season? I tweeted about it. I was like, this is rough for Nashville, and then they won 6-3. So that's the way that works. Philly 2-2 in Toronto. They're in third on 50 points. New York City, they've been up and down. They were out as of like a couple days ago. Well, now they're in fourth on 47, a 1-0 win against the Fire on a PK. Orlando, 47 points, lost to the Crew. Atlanta, late win. Joseph Martinez, the King, El Rey, getting it for them. 46 points. They are in on sixth place. DC in. They had to win against the Red Bulls Atlanta Cup. They did win, 1-0. 44 points. And then just below, you have New York on 43. Montreal on 43. Both of them have played 31 games to DC's 32. So there's an advantage for them, despite being outside the playoffs looking in right now. And then Columbus and Miami are still, quote-unquote, alive. Columbus more than Miami. Miami are dead. They would have to win out and have a bunch of crazy results go their way and make up 18 goal differential.
I read your article. I read your article.
You did?
Okay, they are
good.
Dead.
They're dead. It's over. Yeah. That's it for them. The Crew, they've got a path, but it's a difficult path. A lot would have to go right for them. Let's run it down here, though. DC Red Bulls. This is not like a vintage performance from Hernan Losada's team. I actually thought outside the win, the most interesting part about this whole thing was Hernan doubling down once again, as he's done for much of the year, and saying, we don't have the same top-end talent as everybody else. We need to get some. I hope that I'm listened to. What do you make of that, Charlie? To me, that seems like a guy coming over from Europe, and that would have been sort of the week-to-week conversation at Beershot, I think it was, of look how we're overperforming compared to the rest of the league in terms of payroll and spend, mm-hmm. and that would have been how he's measured. We don't often do it quite that explicitly in MLS, though maybe we should. I don't know.
I think of it as a cop-out. You knew what you were getting into. You knew where this club was going, the direction, and you said, I can get this club into a playoffs, right? That's the goal.
Well, that was the goal.
Well, the
but
goal
I think
is,
he acknowledged the relative difficulty of what was going to have to happen, given 10 years of culture that he was going to have to build against and everything
right.
else. But it does sort of feel like he's already starting the case of like, well, this is why we didn't. But yeah, I think more importantly, if I was a DC fan, I would be saying, well, I hope he is listened to.
Right.
I hope we do get more high-end DP players that can help us take that next step.
Well, considering that you look at the new Audi field that looks half built, you would hope that they say, you know what, we're gonna invest in you, Hernan Losada, and we're gonna invest in the squad because we believe in you. And he did turn the squad around. Because people respect DC United, the way they play.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's high energy, it's commitment, it's a lot on the players, and it took them a while to adjust, but they did. They put themselves in a decent spot. They're above the playoff line, but it's not easy. I mean, they're going to be playing the Crew, and that's going to be their season right there. If they beat the Columbus Crew at home, which is not going to be easy.
But
you will
DC is one of the best teams in the league at home. They're one of the worst teams in the league away from home.
They'll be in the playoffs if they win that game.
All right, we'll see for DC. Big weekend coming up for them. You said it. They got the Columbus Crew at home on Saturday. So, Red Bulls, didn't you bury them? Weren't we doing that thing where we had like our shovels out and we were like, get out the wheelbarrow, like dump the,
I don't know if I buried
put them
6 feet
under.
I don't think I buried them.
Anders says you might have. I don't know. His memory is usually better than mine.
I don't know. I think I was pretty close to burying them.
Oh, okay.
I don't think I buried them.
To be fair, they were pretty close to burying themselves. This was not the result that the Red Bulls wanted, but still 31 games played, which means they have an extra opportunity against DC and some others. So I think they could still do it.
I still don't think they get in the playoffs.
Okay. Let's see. The final three games, they got Montreal at home on Saturday. And then Wednesday, home against Atlanta. That's two pretty good ones against teams that are directly in competition with them. Right. And then away to Nashville on the final day of the season. So the next two games is what it comes down to. If you can take points away from your direct opponents in the East and gain them in the position that they're in, they'll probably be in the playoffs.
Yes.
So comes down to two games. Atlanta United, they would have been out of the playoff field with a loss to Inter Miami. They were down 1-0 to Gonzalo Higuain. They won 2-0. Araujo, Joseph Martinez, when your DPs play well and score goals, you win games, right? And when Brad Guzan stands on his head, because Inter Miami should have scored more than one goal in this game. Absolutely. They Neville afterwards is like, not even thinly veiled. He's like, your best, biggest players have to come good. I was like, Phil, that's, you could just say his name. Yeah. You say Gonzalo. Like, you just, that's, you just say it. Like, that's, you just say his name. You can do that.
I buried them, though. I can tell you that.
Yeah.
I buried Inter.
Come on. That wasn't a courageous thing to do, though. We all
but they're
them.
Still alive, technically.
Yeah. Life support. Getting ready to pull the plug. NYCFC Chicago, I have nothing of any importance to say about this game other than they are into fourth with a 1-0 win against the Fire via PK. Mm-hmm. I couldn't be bothered on this night of many MLS games to tune into that one. It just wasn't going to catch my interest. But they have Inter Miami on the road on Saturday at 1:30 p.m. Eastern. Univision, Tutti, and Twitter. They could hold on to a home game. And for them, that's pretty important because they are a different team at Yankee Stadium than they are away. 10 wins at home, 3 wins away, 8 losses away. So
yeah, they could jump Philly for that third spot.
They could.
With a win at Inter Miami, and then they play Philly at home to finish the season out.
Mm-hmm. Big one on Decision Day. No doubt about that. Hey, remember, Decision Day, by the way, folks, we're all going to be there for a second show. Watch party on that one. So we'll start about 10 minutes before the games start on that Sunday, and then it'll just be live. We'll have a bunch of special guests. We'll have highlights as they come. We'll have the live standings on screen as well as the scoreboard on screen. You'll see a goal alert every time a goal is scored. We'll all be monitoring the game. So, hey, NYCFC scores against Philadelphia. You know, I don't know. I guess if we had you on that game, Charlie, you might not be as happy as others, being a semi-Philly guy. But go! We're going to yell it out. We're going to have a really fun time. It's going to be me, Dave, Kalen, Doyle. You are coming in for the second half. I think you have that Revs game.
Yes.
And then some special guests we will book. So that's a reminder to check that one out. More in the Eastern Conference. We have an email here from Sean. He's from San Jose, talking about his home state of Ohio, where there were 14 goals scored in two MLS games. 5 in the Crew win over Orlando, 9 in whatever it is that happened in Cincy, Nashville. I don't have any evidence to back this up, but that has to be the most MLS goals in a single state on one day. That's a good email. There's no research done there, just gut feelings. But did you watch any of this Nashville-Cincy game? It was going on while you were calling the Revs. Did you catch it out of the corner of your eye at all?
I just caught the scoreline, and I was I can't believe this. What's
everything about this was incredible. Just completely absurd. PKs missed, crazy calls, Cincy up 3-1, then the inevitable Cincy just getting shellacked, 5 straight goals, pushed straight off the field. Nashville needed something like this, I think. They had kind of been in this like ho-hum doldrum space where you look at them and you look at their record and you say, yeah, that's a good team, but you look at their performances, you say, I have some questions about where they're going to get production because so many of their players are streaky and Hany Mukhtar's been in and out a little bit lately. Well, everybody was in and it wasn't just the Hany Mukhtar show. I think the biggest positive for Nashville out of this game, outside Ake Loba, who got his first goal in MLS, and that's huge for him and his confidence. Hopefully he can be something useful for them, impactful for them, dynamic for them going into the playoffs, but it's Randall Leal. Randall Leal looked like just a monster. In the open field, when he had opportunities to finish, when he had opportunities to see the final pass or understand where the play was going, he was really clean and effective in this game. And I know it's against Cincinnati, folks. I know that Cincinnati's defending in this one was dire often, but we are big Randall Leal guys on this show. So congratulations
garbage.
To him.
Just call it what it is, garbage.
I think I have one in the mailbag here. Oh, yeah, here it is. FC Cincinnati is the worst team in MLS history, and it's not even close. If you were Chris Albright, who are a few players you would look to bring in from inside the league that could help the team? I would love to hear y'all's opinion on this, and I love the show. I haven't thought about this enough, but it's going to take more than just a couple players. If you have a thought, Cincy fans, if you're looking around the league and you're saying, I want that guy, let us know. 401-206-0MLS, extratimeandmlssoccer.com. Anders, producing Anders in the chat here, throwing a name out. Stephen Cleveland.
I'd say John Bell, too.
John Bell would be a good one, too, yeah.
That's a center back you can build off of, has showed well when he's played with the Revolution.
All right.
Yeah.
Dead. Sorry. Come on. If John hears that, he's gonna like be coming to you, Charlie, and being like, "What are you doing? Why would you even say that?"
Yeah. Actually, Brian Bilolo and Bruce will be like, "Hey, we're trying to keep this guy."
Yeah. This is he's a good player and a good cap play. Why are you popping off on ETR?
But I am telling you, this team would lose to the worst Chivas team. Like,
you think so? Just, between Chivas and Cincy, you're taking Cincy.
I'm taking Chivas.
Well, that's what I mean, to lose. Because when those two match up, you don't think about the winner of that matchup. You think of it like, that's because of who they are. You think about the loser of that matchup.
It is horrid.
Here's the good news, though. Here's the good news for FC Cincinnati.
Yeah.
And you've got to look for it, and you've got to find it. That's just the way it is.
They got a brand new stadium.
Oh, it's a beautiful stadium. Yeah, it's wonderful. Stadium. The march, you know, all that normal stuff. But look, three straight years, worst record in MLS, but they only have two wooden spoons. You know why? Because in 2020, ISC did not award a wooden spoon. So Cincinnati may be at the very bottom for their first 3 years in MLS, but they don't have three wooden spoons. You got to find the positives where you can, Charlie.
That is such a great positive. Oh my gosh.
You know what? I hope that makes you feel a little bit more buoyant on this Thursday, FC Cincinnati fans. All right, that's it for us outside the mailbag. Let's get into it. 401-206-0MLS, extra time at MLSsoccer.com. We'll be back on Monday, as always, to break everything down from week 33, I want to say.
By the way, did you get a line on the side of your head?
Did I?
Is that other side?
Where?
Right there.
That's just bedhead. That's bedhead. I do have a new barber.
A little like
I do have a good a barber there. Like if I was going to do that, I'd go in the eyebrow.
Yeah.
I don't think I could pull that off. I'm 35 and a father now. It doesn't work for me. Here's a question. I saw Nate Bucchetti tweeting about, should we go to two shields? Charlie, one in the east and one in the west if the schedule doesn't sort of even out? No, you don't like that?
Nope. Not a fan. Just keep it one, where all teams are gunning for the same trophy. Whether you're on the east or on the west, you got to win your games, and that's what it is. You can only play who's on your schedule, but you got to make the most of it. And I think one trophy just simplifies it. Best team across both conferences takes a supporter shield.
I knew I could count on you, Charlie. There is but one supporter shield. You don't make the schedule. The Revs didn't. The Sounders didn't. None of these teams do. They play the schedule that's in front of them. Formats change. That's what happens in professional sports. Things change. You got to win what's in front of you. As Bruce said, soccer, what is it? We won the game. That's what you do in soccer games. Well, that's what you got to do to win the Supporters Shield. Here is a hypothetical, and this was really fun. A lot of people had a great time with this. Spencer Adams on Twitter. He's curious what season you would rather have of the following. And we have to define what you is, Charlie. Is this like – I think this is – is it us as fans? Is it? It's somehow you're like deeply connected to this particular team. So we're talking about 2022 here. Let's just say Team A, 77 points. They set a new MLS points record, 24 wins. They also they win the Shield, obviously, and they win MLS Cup, a double winning season for Team A. Just across the board, an incredible year. Arguably one of the best teams in MLS history, if not the best team. Team B, 76 points. Maybe they tie the Revs, whatever it is, but they get 21 wins. They also undefeated. They don't lose a game. They have 13 draws. So they're the quote-unquote invincibles, but they're out of the first round of the playoffs. But they win the Open Cup, and they win the Leagues Cup. So it's not the big Leagues Cup, because we're talking 2022. Mm-hmm. It's still the smaller Leagues Cup, but they're the first MLS team to do it. And they're unbeaten in the regular season. Team C wins 19 games in the regular season, 57 points. Still a great season. Wonderful season in the regular season. They lose to Team A in the MLS Cup Final, the Shield-winning team, the points record team. But they win CCL.
Ooh. Okay.
Which one would you want? Which one would you say, that's the one I'm about?
First place.
Really? Is Shield in MLS Cup?
Well, it sounds all nice. You can put a bow on third place and a bow on second place and say, wow, we did a great job. Give me everything. Give me the MLS Cup. Give me first.
But you didn't get everything. You didn't get CCL. Somebody made history.
Number one, at the end of the day, all you're judged on is where you finish in the playoffs. So MLS Cup. And everyone's going to be talking about that. And then, wow, you finished top of the table with a team that didn't lose once, which is almost impossible to not lose and not finish first.
Finish second. Yeah, that is pretty incredible. Yeah.
It's almost impossible. And third place, like, yeah, you won CCL, but you're third place. Like, You're not good enough.
You went to an MLS Cup final, but you didn't win it.
Great. No one's talking about the 24. I'll tell you right now. No one's talking about the 2014 Revs in MLS Cup final. So I know how it goes.
That's man. We have really collected a group of people that have lost MLS Cup finals on this show, haven't we? Between you and Kalen. It's a tough like 3 or 4 year spread right there in LA.
No one's talking about that.
And losing them all in LA too.
Yeah, no one's talking about second place.
No, they're not. You're right. Anders says as a Sounders fan, he would take the CCL.
Oh my god. Cuz they've won the other two. We've won everything. We're so used to it. Give us something new, a new challenge. Stop it. No, you wouldn't. Don't give me that. No, you wouldn't.
I had a lot of people telling me I would be the one that goes B and take U.S. Open Cup and Leagues Cup. And while I'm tempted for the unbeaten season in Leagues Cup, I would probably tilt that way if it was the new Leagues Cup where everybody's in between Liga MX and MLS. But still, the bridging the gap Leagues Cup, I'm not. I know this.
So would you go one?
I know this
one,
is sacrilege. I would go 1-3-2.
I knew it. I would too.
Yeah, because I still think CCL is. Leagues Cup is this new thing that we want to win, but CCL, it's like, I don't know.
It's like you've been getting
your butt kicked on the playground for 20 years. You haven't even had a chance. People laugh at you. You've just been getting wiped every single time. And for you to step up to that bully and punch him in the mouth and be like, this is the first time. It's different from here on out. I will always be the one. Don't put my name in your mouth. That would be really sweet. But come on, MLS Cup and the Shield, and you set the points record. Like that is a dream season. How about this, Barrett Madden? Watching DeJuan Jones every week while also watching the U.S. men's national team reach for depth at left back. Is it time we start including DeJuan in the conversation? If not, what's holding him back?
I would say yes. I think he's going to go to January camp. If you look at the Revolution team and players who have done well this year, Matt Polster has probably certainly earned a January call up, and then DeJuan Jones, of players that are unheralded, right? So players that aren't getting praised when you look at the Revolution and how they've done. Typically, it's Carlos Hill 1, Gustavo Bo at Ambuxa 2 and 3, and then Matt Turner, obviously up there, number 4. The rest of the team kind of, or Tejan Buchanan, the rest of the team is kind of, they're good role players. They do their job and not given, I guess, necessarily the credit that they deserve, in my opinion. But a DeJuan Jones, he's a player that's intriguing because I think long-term his position's not left back. It's right back. Brandon Bye has done a terrific job playing right back for the Revolution. He's just a lockdown defender. I think the attacking part of his game lacks, and that's where DeJuan Jones has excelled in the attacking part of the game at left back. The problem is, I think for me, is when you watch DeJuan Jones, he's so athletic. He's a freak of nature that he does get beat more often than he should as a left back, but he has the recovery speed to make up. You can do that for a majority of the games that you're playing in MLS. You can't do it at the international level. You're not going to get away with it. You have to be in possession. He gives the ball away a little too often for me. You can't get away with that. So if he can continue to develop that and sharpen those areas, then there won't be any question. He will be brought into the U.S. men's national team camp.
One other note on the Revs here, had somebody hit us up and say a couple of things about the Buxa segment that we did. We were talking about Buxa going for the Golden Boot. He has 16 goals, none of them PKs, etc. Mm-hmm. Xavi and Rui Diaz also have 16 goals. We didn't mention that as we were talking about Buxa, and Xavi's hurt and Rui Diaz is out, so those two don't really right now have a chance to make that up. So Buxa is actually tied for second in the boot race. Yep, got that. So he's not the only one. Second, Xavi has 16 non-PK goals as well. So this particular person, I think they texted in, so I don't have a name, says, yeah, it's extremely impressive, but Buxa isn't the only one. Got that. We acknowledge that. But he is the only one right now that can make progress since the other two are out. What an incredible season for him. Do you think he'll be there next year?
Yes, I do. Okay. At least till the summer. That's what I would say.
Good qualifier. So
the summer is, I don't think that we'll see a number of changes next year from this team, which is great because you want them to also have a shot at CCL. The only person that's missing is Tejan Buchanan, and that's a huge piece. So, how do the Revs address that in the offseason?
Going to be a big question for them. We end here with a very rational email from CM Leota. TQL Stadium appears to be cursed. Is anyone as nervous as I am for the US NMNT to play there?
No, I'm not nervous.
You
don't?
Do you believe? Are you a superstitious person, Chuck?
Sometimes.
About what? What do you get superstitious about?
The knocking on wood.
Oh, okay.
I'm a big guy when it comes to jinxes. So I feel like my juju is strong.
Oh, okay.
I have strong juju.
Where does your strong juju come from, do you think?
From my Gambian side.
Oh,
I inherited
Yeah, it's passed down by generations. Okay.
Yep.
All right. I'm not a superstitious person. I don't think TQL Stadium is cursed. I think it's a beautiful, incredible facility, and I hope that the U.S. handle business there. But I also can be superstitious, Charlie, and I was in my backyard last night, and it was dark and about to rain, and it wasn't windy, and out of nowhere, a wind chime just started going crazy. You better bet your ass I ran inside immediately.
Yep,
I locked that door, and I put the chain up, and I was just like peeking out the window, just like, oh my God, what is out there? It's not even windy. What's this wind chime doing?
The Conjuring.
I do. Felt like it.
Yep.
Felt like it. All right, that's it for us. Big thanks to Sam for joining. Been a while since we talked to him on this show. Felt good. And Vinny Sartini, what a breath of fresh air he is. Vancouver yep. Whitecaps trying to make their way into the playoffs. So is everybody at this point, unless you have an E next to your name. We will see you on Monday. Big thanks to our producer, Anders Aarhus. Aarhus. Screwed that one up. I tried to give him credit.
Hey, I got a little Swedish on my shirt for him.
Do you? Nice. All right, enjoy your week. We'll see you on Monday. We'll be right back.